Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Thursday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, as always, joined by Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. On today's show, the earnings parade is continuing this week and into next week as well. So we'll talk about the biggest reports from after the bell and pre-market session today. We have a number of ratings to discuss, a number of buy the dippers to discuss, and I'm sure at some point we'll hit on this JP Morgan crypto thing of the morning. But our guest today at 8:35 will be joined by Chris Temple, editor and publisher of The National Investor, and he can talk to us about the state of value investing. That'll be at 8:35. Joel, what happened here in the overnight session?
Oh, the buy the dippers came in pretty close to that opening 6 p.m. bell. Your pre-market low is just above Wednesday's low, so let's just call up 27.45 and a half. Let's call that your major support for the day. We're 13 handles away from that. On the upside, we have an interesting formation here. Yesterday's high, 62 even. We poked our head above it, went to 63 even. So there's your bogey. Not much resistance if you can clear those pair of highs. Crude up 44 cents here at 54.34. It's working its way back into the 54 handle. Could have closed above there yesterday, but a nice move. That's giving aid to oil stocks, which we will talk about when Triple D comes on. Gold's in the red by $8, kind of sleepy range, 1300 to 1320. Silver in the red by 18 cents at 1547. Dennis, I know you need to leave a little bit early to go get your JP Morgan coin, correct? You're going to be making a market in that, or what's going on with that?
I have no idea what's going on with this. I heard about this cryptocurrency. I mean, Jamie Dimon was the first one that said Bitcoin was stupid, I believe his quote was. And now all of a sudden, JP Morgan's got a crypto coin or something coming out. Spencer, please enlighten me why Jamie Dimon has... It created something that he originally called stupid.
No. He didn't call – so he called Bitcoin stupid.
Bitcoin stupid.
Bitcoin
just
is
– Bitcoin. Just his coin's not stupid.
Just Bitcoin. This is not
– Well, his coin's not stupid. No. He was actually right with the Bitcoin. Well, not necessarily stupid, but he was right if he would have went bearish, because I think he was doing that when Bitcoin was around 10,000, 11,000. It's 3,000. So he's actually right if he was bearish, if stupid was equivalent to bearish, which I would think it would be. But why all of a sudden – flipping the script here, creating his own crypto coin.
It's a peg to the dollar, and it's being used to instantly settle payments between clients of theirs. So it's like a security layer for people sending money to each other. But it's not like available to the public or anything.
So is this like JP Morgan money, basically? Like, when you go, and in Canada we have, and for all you Canadians out there, you'll know this, you have Canadian Tire. And when you go to Canadian Tire shop there, they give you like 1% cash back in Canadian Tire money. And it's like physical money or whatever that you get. And you can use that money at Canadian Tire. Is this just the same thing? Like they're basically just, this is JP Morgan money?
Sure.
Chili Trader's popping in here.
I have no idea. I haven't read anything about this, so I'm asking lots of questions. I've read zero about this.
I guess that's one way of putting it. I haven't heard of it.
Chili Trader says it's not money.
He says it's replacing the SWIFT-coded banks. So that
It's not money. It's not real money. It's pegged to the dollar. The value of the coin won't change. It's not. It's replacing a security layer, essentially, or adding a security layer.
Well, you can only use this within JP Morgan, or are you going to be able to use this outside?
No, JP Morgan clients are the ones that are getting this. It's just for them for now. I would assume. Right.
Interesting. Just a real quick.
Is it really?
Okay.
Okay. Anyways, continue.
I just want to talk about Bitcoin had a big day the other day, the futures. And it's funny that we're talking of this as a big move. It went from 33.52 to 36.27. And then this is just the futures here. And then just has been down the last 3 days. Right now, if it continues lower, support at 3,400. I'm not sure why it had that big 300-day rally, but interesting news. We got some good earnings reports here, Dennis. Let's start with the big dog, the old tech, Cisco Systems, trying to get into the 50 handle.
Big report here, Spencer. Details.
Yep. Cisco after the bell yesterday. Q2 EPS 73 cents, beat by a penny. Sales 12.4 versus 12.41 billion. So a slight beat on the EPS and a slight miss on the sales. All in all, that's pretty in line, though. The Q3 EPS guidance that they gave was higher than estimates by a couple pennies. Sales grew with 4-6% on a year-over-year basis. They're also raising their quarterly dividend from 33 cents to 35 cents per share and add $15 billion to their buyback.
I think the buyback's the big booster here. That's a huge buyback, $15 billion. And I think that's why you're seeing the stock trade up the majority of this gain of 4.57%. That being said, you've identified a huge level, Joel, $50. It's psychological. You can go, it's technical. It's all sorts of things there. We got up to 49.47 back on October the 5th. I'm going to call the wall of 50. Major resistance here. We are way a ways off the all-time high, which I believe, if my memory serves me right, was back during the tech bubble in the year 2000, 19 years ago. I believe it got up to $75. Am I correct?
I mean, and all these things are different, but at my trade station, it says 82.
Maybe. Okay, $82. So, you know, putting into perspective, I always like to give this argument. You've got to be careful when you're buying stocks with PEs of 80 or 100 because Cisco's PE back then was literally 70 or 80, and it was going to be, it was the most valuable company in the world. It was the, you know, the internet stock of internet stocks, and it was going to continue to take off. And if you bought that at the highs back in the year 2000, 19 years later, you are still down 40% on your original investment if you bought at 82. So it's difficult to just buy stocks. This is why I'm a value guy, because when the growth starts to slow, the multiple contracts significantly. And we know Cisco now trades with a multiple. How much do they make?
76 cents, 73 cents.
How much are they supposed to make on the year? Do they say anything about the year? I'm just trying to do a quick PE.
No, they guided in the mid-70s for next quarter. So
let's say $3, $3, $4. The thing's trading with 14, 15 PE now, which is reasonable. When you're buying it back in the year 2000, a PE of 70 or 80, it wasn't reasonable, and that's why you lost money for 19 years. PEs matter. They don't matter when the things are hot, but don't get stuck with them, because when the growth slows, the PEs will contract. And we know we saw this with a lot of different companies over the years, and we definitely saw it with Cisco. And that's why I'm a value investor. I like to buy stocks where I'm not going to have a huge PE contraction if I'm sticking them in my long-term retirement account. Cisco in your long-term retirement account, maybe it makes more sense now. PEs of 14, 15 can work. So dividends nice, buybacks nice, but I don't chase stocks. So, and 50 is a huge level.
I don't know what day it was. Was it earlier in the week, though, Dennis? You said, yeah, look at this chart. Look at this chart. Doesn't this look like it's getting ready to go? I think it was, maybe
but
it was
then it was
on
earnings. Yeah. And then we're like, oh, once you have the earnings, then you got to, you know, just, well, obviously earnings reports will, you know, matter more than technicals. So fundamentals always trump technicals. So I basically did make a trade because I didn't want to hold it through the earnings report.
Yeah, no, good eye on that one. We haven't quite gotten up to that $50 level. $49.90 stands as your after hours high. We have not been over $50 here in the Cisco Kid since December of 2000. You had a high at $55.75. So bad month that month. It went from the previous month, it closed at $47.88. Fell down to 38 and a quarter. So I don't know, find some daily highs back from then, but $50 seems to be a psychological level for today and probably some good size there as well.
Jump over to the other report here. And Cisco is going to move some of your tech stocks. Like, I mean, that's obviously one of the big ones. And you are seeing tech fairly strong here this morning. We did have a disappointing report from NetApp, which we'll get to in a second. But I want to go to the other big stock from this morning, and that is Coca-Cola. It's having a significant move down. I took this home short through the report. I don't normally do that, but the 50 level was so enormous. There's big size there. I knew it was in the buck. I'm like, they're going to have to blow it away to take out 50. they obviously didn't blow it away. Scalper Blood and Me is already covered. Spencer, give us the details on the Coke earnings.
Essentially an inline report. The Q4 EPS, 43 cents, was the estimate, and sales, 7.1 billion versus 7.03 billion. So a slight sales beat, an inline EPS, and it's an inline report, so they did not blow it away.
Yeah, they were going to have to. It's just, I took this just because 50 was huge, and I knew there was size there. I just doing the math there. I was like, they got to blow it away to go through it. I liked my chances. I had run up into the report. I just liked the setup. I don't normally take stocks short into an earnings report, but I liked the setup on this one. So I did. And it was trading up last night too. And I was able to get up in the 49.90s. So rewarded here this morning for that. Wish I would have done more, but I'm always a little bit conservative. When I take stocks through a report, I never put on a full size because you can lose a lot of money. Although Coke's a little bit, it's not going to be a stock that goes up 10% on you or down 10%. So, you know, it is a conservative stock in itself. But that being said, you know, it's still moving 3% here this morning. So I always decrease my size when I'm taking a stock with major risk through a report.
Yeah, I mean, but yet, potentially had an out. I mean, if they would have blown the report away.
If they would have really blew it away, it probably would have went higher than 50, obviously. I probably would have lost, but I still feel like 50 would have held it a little bit, maybe held the opening print down. I just felt like a risk reward was there for me to take that short in the report. And I can't believe it's down $2 here now. So I looked at the numbers and I was like, it's essentially in line. It fell a dollar and I covered. It's up $2 now, so obviously shouldn't have covered.
It's just continuing to leak here, and then very unusual for the stock. It just made a pre-market low of 47.94. Boom. I would say if it gets to 47.5, 47.47, man, that would be a huge move for it. That was your January 31st low. Abner's boy is asking, he says we ignored his question about what are buybacks. I'm not sure. Buybacks are simply just when the company goes into the open market and buys back their own stock. It's a controversial tactic, right? I know there's a federal, the feds are talking about taxing it differently. That's not going to pass. And it's just a question that, you know, if it's better to spend the money buying back your own stock or to put the money, Dennis, I know you have strong opinions on this.
I mean, I've always thought I'd rather have a dividend than a buyback. I feel like these companies buy their stocks back always at the highs because they're always doing it when times are good. They have excess cash. They're always doing it. Times are good. We saw IBM buying their stock back in the 200s and they're paying too much for it. I always think, you know, either, you know, there's multiple things you can do. You know, obviously the number one thing you do is, you know, reinvest for growth. So you keep it within the company, reinvest for growth. If you don't want to keep all the excess cash you're making, then you give it back to shareholders. And giving it back to shareholders are basically in two ways, through buybacks or dividends. So in this case, you know, they're doing a buyback, and a lot of companies like to do buybacks because they probably just don't like writing the physical checks, and it also makes their earnings look better in the long run. You know, maybe it makes themselves look better because their earnings are, you know. But I personally like getting paid, so I like the dividends.
And
I don't like to do special dividends. I do believe they reward special dividends more than they do because when you see a stock pay a $5 special dividend, you almost always see it get bid up at least half of that dividend. We see a stock do a big buyback, it doesn't get bid up as much. So I feel like the market rewards dividends more than they do buybacks. That's just maybe the market environment we're in. Maybe it's my selective perception. But I've always been more a fan of dividend than buyback. But anyways, everybody seems to do buybacks.
Well, just to be clear, the reason that stocks tend to go up in a buyback is there's two reasons. One, it theoretically, it's the company is showing confidence in their stock because they want to own more of it. And also, they're just reducing the float, right? They're taking more shares out.
Well, that's what it is.
Right. They're taking what was the Cisco, $15 billion or whatever that number was. They're taking that out of the public market. So that's just less shares for the rest of us to trade. So, you know,
I mean, Apple too. I'm a sudden done buybacks. A lot of the Apple, you know, earnings growth here might be just fueled through buybacks, you know, the bottom line number, because there's less shares outstanding. It's just math. So, you know, you take the earnings and you divide it by the amount of shares and you got your earnings per share. If there's less shares out there, there's obviously going to be, you know, the math just adds up.
I guess the best example of it not working was IBM, right? IBM had those buybacks. I mean,
if they're buying it back high, that's when it doesn't work. It still works. They're still like, I just feel like, you know, now you could have bought IBM $130. You're paying the 200s. General Electric's buybacks, you know, they've done a lot of those way high too. So they did that spinoff back when the thing was 29. Synchrony Financial got rid of all their good stuff, which I should have went with. You know, it's I just think they time these. It makes sense that they're always buying when they're strong because that's when they have the most money. So that's when they're going to. So when times are good, they're always going to be, you know, doing something excess with their cash. They can't figure out what to do with it. They give it back to shareholders. They give it back in a buyback. That means they're always buying back their stock when times are really good. So they're not saving it for a rainy day. And we know in this market, it rains once in a while. So that's why I always think that they tend to buy them back too high, which is why I don't like buybacks. But that's my own personal preference. I mean, the market obviously still rewards buybacks. We're seeing it, you know, Cisco trade up here this morning. So I'd rather have dividends.
All right. Do we want to do the goose on the loose, or the CyberArk, Spencer? Which one do you want to go to?
Last I checked, CyberArk was up more than actually, I haven't even looked at goose, but I wonder if CyberArk is my point.
Holy. I just looked at that for the first time today.
Yeah. You're kidding me. What have you been doing? Are you not looking at your filters?
Yeah, you gotta look
at I got a few positions on, so we're kind of trading. So luckily, I'm not short CyberArk. This got bit up a few bucks last night before the report. I tried to hit it. I missed it. I'm glad I missed that one. Sometimes the misses are good. So anyways, because I was like, oh, it's giving me a two-point lead. I'll take that two-point lead. Holy moly. Lucky I didn't. This must have blew it away.
The Q4 EPS was 89 cents versus a 59 cent estimate, sales of 109 versus $95 million. So big beats for the Q4.
What was the earnings beat?
The 89 cents versus 59 cents.
That's a huge beat.
And then the Q1 EPS guidance they gave was higher. The sales guidance they gave was higher. Fiscal year EPS guidance higher. Fiscal year sales guidance higher. So
incredible, man.
Higher guidance across the board and earnings beats. That'll do it.
Yeah, wow. Incredible move here. I mean, you come up to a psychological $100 level, so we'll go with that one off the bat. But
that's all I could say, yeah.
Yeah, but it's hard to come in here and just say, okay, I'm going to short it here. It's going to come back in because when these things just open up, and the same way that I say when stocks are making new lows, you got to go. When stocks are making new highs, it doesn't rhyme, but you got to go too if you're short. So I never like to be short a stock making a new all-time high because it's all air above you, and we've seen things get crazy sometimes when it's all air above you and nobody's having any pain. You know, you're probably going to squeeze. I don't know what the short interest is on this. It's probably not that high, but whoever is short this stock is kind of throwing up on their desk this morning. I don't know what the expected move was here, but I can almost guarantee it wasn't 15%.
What a move here in CyberArk. I'll just give you the pre-market high, 101.05. That's $2 away. You can use that as a target. Out of pullback here. If you're trying to buy the dip and go long this, you're going to have to consult Jeremy Newsom because I have absolutely no idea where to buy.
Above my pay grade.
Yeah, there's just absolutely no way that I could figure out how to buy this like on a dip. So I'll just give you the resistance, taking out the pre-market high, greener skies ahead.
Jeremy does trade these things, and he does figure out just with fibs and everything else his ways, you know, ways to buy these things on the pullback, and he's buying strong stocks usually, and he does really well with it. I mean, Jeremy's very consistent over there. I always see this, you know, and he does it with, you know, he's got his own little system there where he's got risk units. And he measures everything as opposed to his risk units and how he does. Seems like that guy makes money every month. It's pretty consistent.
Just like you.
I do it a different way, though. Yeah, and I've had – it's a lot of consecutive months now, Joel. And in my regular prop trading account, I have not had a losing month since 1999. That's the truth.
Did you have one in 99?
Yeah, I had a bunch. That's when I started.
That's right.
Actually, I think it was like 6 or 7 months in to my break trading career when I stopped having losing months, and I've never had a losing month since at break trading. Now, obviously, my investment portfolio is going to have I mean, you have bad times in your investment portfolio. But on my break trading, prop trading account, I've not had a losing month since 1999.
Man, I wish I could
say that. I'm doing statistical edges. So when you employ those things 50 to 100 times every single evening times 20 days, the odds are if you have a 1 or 2% edge, the odds of you losing money on any given month is very, very small. I'd have to have something blow up against me probably, or my strategy stop working. But they've worked, you know, for 20 years, so I'm hoping, you know, I probably have another 10 or 15 years. Maybe I can keep that streak going. It'd be pretty cool. Keep it going. How many months is that? I've traded for 19 years. 19 times 12. What is that?
It's almost 240.
240 consecutive months of profitability.
Oh, so, my gosh.
But I'm just saying, you know, your high-frequency traders are going to be similar. I mean, Virtu Financial probably never has a losing month. You know, you see Citadel, they probably never have a losing month. When you're employing these little statistical edges over the, you know, and they're small, over large periods of time, they tend to, you know, work themselves out. So I would imagine there's quite a few other break traders, you know, break trading, not patting them all on the back, but I bet you there's a few others that get traders that haven't had losing months in years either.
Let's see here. Guys, why are some stocks not allowed to be shorted on my trading platform? I can buy, but I cannot sell it or short it. Hard to borrow. I mean, some stocks, the
what's the question?
Why you can't short some stocks on their platform?
Yeah, exactly. The borrows are sometimes tough. So if the broker can't locate the stock for you, and sometimes they'll have an internal locate system where you can go and you can try to locate it, or you can go externally and go get a locate. Like with me, I can go out, you know, it's prop though, and you can go outside and you can get a locate. And you can give that, you know, code to, you know, to be able to short your stock. But, you know, or you're having an internal locate desk, but it's usually just your broker's inventory. And if your broker doesn't have a great inventory, you know, you're not going to be able to short those stocks. And sometimes it's just hard. I mean, sometimes you just can't get locates across the street. Like we saw that happen with VIA, the one, you remember, for 2 weeks, and VIA started to explode and everybody's like, why is VIA going up and VIAB not? It's the same company, because the locate came real tough and anybody who had the spread on trying to get it and they was getting bought in. I mean, if your broker, and that's the scary thing about shorting stocks that are difficult to locate, you might get a hard to borrow. You find it 3 days later, they can't find it. And you have 2 days to obviously, you know, before settlement there, if they can't find that stock, they're going to buy you in. Your broker will physically go into your account and press the buy button for you because they can't be short a stock that doesn't have a locate. That's always a danger with shorting thin stocks.
Oh, yeah. And I can remember, too, didn't Twitter, right before the lockup go, didn't that have, like, you couldn't borrow it? It was extremely, sure, that was a long time ago. But I can remember, it doesn't usually happen with big stocks that much because these big brokerage houses with all the different clients own different stocks, so they have it in their inventory, also with the institutions. But sometimes they say, hey, no, I don't want you loaning my stock out. And that's when you get these problems. Another way to play the markets, you know, like Twilio. He mentioned this was Twilio yesterday. I guess the only other option would be going to the options markets. Of course, you know, the premiums, and, you know, you got to pay up to the premium gods here. But if you can't borrow something, you really feel like you need to short it, go and take a look at the options market. That's probably your only alternative. I don't know what the best broker is for shorting low float stocks, Dennis.
IB I have, and I'll tell you, IB's got a great inventory. Okay. IB does, because IB gives incentive, obviously, to everybody else to loan out, too. If you have something in your portfolio, you can participate in their loan program, and they'll pay you part of that. So nice. If anybody owns a stock in their account, they'll throw it out there. If they're willing to, you know, lend it, they'll throw it out in their inventory. Now, sometimes you'll see, you can go and actually look at the open inventory, and there may be only like 1,000 shares. So you do 1,000 shares, you just used it all up. So whoever's lending those shares, if they decide to stop lending them, that's where you could potentially get bought in. But I mean, on stocks like, you know, like all your big caps and mega caps that I trade all the time, like Coca-Cola, you're never going to have a borrow problem in that. There'd be millions of shares and it's dirt cheap. I actually get rebated at, you know, at Bray Trading, we get rebates. So we don't even pay fees. It's actually rebates because you get, when you're shorting something, you're getting money cash in. So you're getting interest there. So I actually get rebates. That's through Goldman. But, you know, there's, you know, when you're in certain areas, you actually get rebates for shorting stocks in some cases when the interest rates are higher.
Okay. A couple questions there. We kind of went into a question tangent there, but that's what we like to do here on Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep Show. Any questions is a good question. Also, the the terminology that we use sometimes can be confusing. So anything, just throw it out there. But let's the goose. The goose is on the loose here. Spencer, give us that report.
Yeah, I'm giving this one. The earnings are going to be in Canadian dollars, but Dennis will know what that means.
It means 1.31 or whatever times your divide by. So divide by 1.31 on your U.S. And that's what you get. 0.75 times or whatever it is on the other way.
Q3 adjusted EPS, 96 Canadian cents. Sales, $399, or just about $400 million. Versus $265 million in the same quarter last year. They also raised their guidance for the fiscal year. They raised their sales growth from like the low 30% range to the high 30% range, and they raised their EPS growth guidance from the low 40s to the mid to high 40s. So some sales growth guidance raise is for Goose.
It's a nice pop for the stock. How much money are they making? This thing's got a crazy multiple too, doesn't it?
Yeah, they made 96 cents last quarter.
Well, they're making some money now.
Oh yeah,
that's pretty.
Hell cool. Yeah! You know what they charge for one of those jackets?
With the rare Canada Goose feathers.
They charge.
As at my cottage, I have 50 on my lawn every morning. Those Canada geese are everywhere, man. They're not a rare bird. I know it's our national bird. I tell you, they are everywhere. But anyways.
Yeah, wow. This stock, man, it had a nice move. It marched up ahead of the report. A couple spikes to 63.50. Let's see. You've had about a 30-point move, so you're well above the 50% retracement. Let me see if I can zoom out on my dailies here. And the only thing I'm seeing at home, that was at 60, so it took that out. I mean, the only thing I'm seeing on the dailies is 63.91. We spiked up to 63.50 a couple times and then came right back down. So I call the 63 handle for me. If I was long this stock, 63 to 64, nothing but a sell area.
What's it down in the after, or what's it down the pre-market here, Joel?
It had a spike down to 59.29.
Yeah.
And then it put in a double top at 63.50. And then that was just kind of, it's impossible. Sometimes I look at that pre-market chart and I can say, okay, I feel there's a buyer, a seller here. I can't tell what the hell's going on in this one.
Yeah, but I'm going to go with you there. You're kind of in the middle of nowhere, too, even when you look at the daily. I mean, you'd like to say, oh, there's levels to lean on here or something, but I just see air everywhere. I think I'm laying off Goose today. I'm not going to be trading this one.
Yeah, Spinner says it has a history of selling off after earnings. So, I mean, that was a nice run, too. I mean, where did it end the year? It ended the year at
40. We're up at 60. We're up 50% a month and a half.
Yeah.
It's had a pretty good run.
Yep.
Doesn't mean it can't go higher. Momentum's there. I mean, it can do anything on these earnings reports, but it's not blasting off on it here either. So, we're up 3%. I think the expected move is probably significantly higher than this. So, I just know the stock is wild. So, I'd gather it's way more than 3% the expected move. But, anyways, keep that in mind if you're trading and maybe where the expected move was, you find some resistance.
For Michael Pellini here, thoughts on eBay and gap and go after earnings, a little pausing here. I mean, just looks like it's going up. Yesterday's high, 36.54. It's trading up 17
Activist
cents.
In there too, right?
Yeah. That's
what really was the catalyst to really take it off. Activist.
It was Elliot, right?
Who's in there?
It was Elliot.
And they were talking. They're trying to push for them to like spin some stuff off, aren't they? Or split it up or do something. I can't remember, but weren't they pushing for something like that?
They had a couple different ideas.
They're pushing them to do some, financial engineering or whatever, as Joel would call it.
38.34 was your July high. What's interesting, though, I mean, on that day, if you were actually chasing on that day, you probably got tagged a little bit because it had a 34.75 high and closed on the low of the session. But if you if you just were patient with it, they put in a couple lows at 32.50, and now, bada boom, bada bing, here it is. Looks like it's breaking out quite a ways off its all-time high. But nice move the last 2 months, two big green candles here. For eBay, 8.29, we're about to get imbalances here. Spoo's not moving this morning, folks. Sorry about that. Pre-market high, 63 even. Yesterday's high, 62 even, perhaps. Will that open up the magic door up to 27.94.50? You guys are probably sick of hearing me talk about that level, but that is the only daily level I have in the S&P's as daily resistance. Other levels and other things can come into play there, but that's the next target on the upside here, pretty close to that magic 2800. Dennis, 100. On the...
Well, okay, we'll give you those because we're only 3 seconds away here. So they're just popping hot off the press. Coke, 107,000 to sell. We knew that would be the case because the stock is trading down $2 on their earnings number. We do have, we did have data coming out here too. U.S. retail sales fall 1.2% month over month. It flew, the headline flew by so fast that I actually didn't have a chance to read the rest of it, but that headline, I think, is the catalyst here for the market to sell off a little bit.
And a little just, bit.
A little bit. A little bit.
A tad. Spencer, do you want to
call it a tad?
Do you have another buy the dip opportunity here? Spencer, you want to go over any of those numbers? I mean, I just can see that.
No.
Well, the retail sales number was it said something about the biggest fall since when? Did you see that?
No. Hold on. I'm looking for it. I didn't see it. I was looking at.
Oh, recession. Oh, no, we're in a recession. Everyone's worried. All right. Yeah, we are. We are mid-range on the sessions, 54 and a quarter. So we'll see if we get down that to level. I believe it's Lee wants to ask about tea here. Man, a boring stock that I look at every once in a while. 29.5 to really 29 to 30. This has been the range. I don't know, going on 14, 15 sessions here. So did sneak a little bit below 29 the other day. 30 seems to be resistant. You're holding this one. You're holding it for the dividend. It's not a stock that Dennis likes.
No, I actually sold my AT. I had my AT&T for years in my portfolio. I've sold it recently. And I just feel like, yes, you know, it's a cash cow. Yes, it has a great dividend here. But the long-term prospects here, I think margins continue to get squeezed. I mean, you know, they obviously have a lot of different businesses, but they've also had a tendency to buy the top. Like that DirecTV repurchase can't be going that well for them. We saw what Dish has done since. And, you know, they're scrambled. They've scrambled for growth multiple times. I think it's, you know, 6.84%. Yeah, the dividend is awesome. But I don't see any potential for any growth here, you know, going forward there. So that's why and I actually could see, you know, not the growth. I could, you know, even see, you know, revenue declining, you know, in the longer term picture here. So I just think it's a little bit of what would I call it? Value trap, maybe?
Hey, Triple D, DJ Euphoria wants to know your favorite technical setup to play.
Joel, what are you thinking? And obviously a lot of my trading, you know, we talk charts a lot. A lot of my individual trading is not technical based. You know, I'm relationship-based trader. I've talked about this at Bray Trading before. So a lot of my individual, my day trading stuff is all relationship-based. There's a lot of trades that I make, believe it or not, that I don't look at a chart. So, but, you know, when I'm doing swing trading, that is more technical based. And we obviously have a lot of people who do swing trading. And I'm looking more for buying pullbacks, you know, and it's not basically a formation, you know, just looking at the stock, is it in an uptrend? If they're in an uptrend, then I'm looking to buy pullbacks. If in a downtrend, I'm looking to sell rallies because the trends can be very persistent for a long period of time. So usually I'm just looking for trends. I always say I teach my technical analysis, like when I'm doing, you know, lectures at Bright or even at a university, you know, I've been at Notre Dame a couple times, Michigan. I usually teach technical analysis fairly quickly. You know, you can pretty much teach it in 5 minutes. And I always go support, resistance, and trends. And, you know, there's obviously some other fun stuff we talk about every once in a while, the 50% fibs. You know, we can talk about different things. But for the most part, I use support. I use resistance, which, you know, just jumps out at you like a sore thumb when you bring up the 90-day chart. And then I'm looking at the trend. And the trend is your friend. Just keep that in mind. So I would just say my favorite technical formation is just the trends. I'm just looking at trends.
I would say for your, like today, that.
What about you, Joel? You answer this question.
I would say double bottoms and triple bottoms.
Yeah. So you're looking at support and resistance.
Yeah.
That ties in with support and resistance.
Yeah. And the reason to do it is because it helps identify the institutions, large buyers and sellers. Also, when you focus on those areas, they give you, let's say you have a double, triple top, you break through it, you go through it, it will tend to act as support when it comes back down to it. So you can use them for, you know, several different ways, right? To, you know, use old support as new resistance as old support. We're getting a ton of stocks here in the Google YouTube chat. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to write these all down. And then at 9 o'clock, I'll stick around for a little bit longer and I will cover these stocks. But we got a lot to cover here still in the remaining 25 minutes. And we got a guest here. So Spencer, who's coming up?
We're going to take a quick break and grab our guest. It is Chris Temple, the publisher and editor of The National Investor. Chris is always a great guest. So we'll be right back in a moment here with Mr. Temple. Well, Welcome back, everyone, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, Joel Elkanah, and Dennis Dick. Now joined by Chris Temple of the National Investor. Chris, it's been a while since we caught up. How's it going?
Well, real good. A little cool here in Florida this morning, but it's still Florida, so I take it.
Oh, man. Now we got it. A little, what is it, 60?
Actually, we got down in the upper 30s in some areas around here last night. I thought I was at the North Pole or something.
All right, so we're technical. We talk about analyst ratings and stock and balances and a lot of, you know, technical stuff that helps your shorter term traders and your swing traders, day traders. But fundamentals, Chris, I mean, those are, you know, what Dennis and I base our long term investing on. Right. I know you're a strong fundamental guy here. We had our big sell off in December. We've rebounded. Different leaders and laggards in the market here. Just give us your appraisal of the shift in the market focus here over the last couple months.
Well, I did one good thing and one not so good thing recently, Joel. First of all, I thought that on Christmas Eve, we were extremely oversold. I told people to buy ETFs that were along everything from small caps to emerging markets. But frankly, we got up around 2,600 on the S&P, and I thought that was going to be it for a while. And so we sold, obviously too early. Now I have to tell you that I think that maybe not to the extreme that we were at Christmas Eve, but I think that the market has gotten very much ahead of itself. I think that a lot of people fail to understand that the best that we can expect from the market, and I'm speaking in general terms, of course, going forward, is what I've called a slow, dull ache. I don't think we're going back to the lows of last year, barring some black swan event, of course, scaring the daylights out of everybody, but nor do I think there's any justification to think that the market can go and make new highs anytime soon. We have a world that is choking on debt. China, in January alone, between its fiscal and monetary stimulus, cranked out more money than any country has done in recorded history. And all that has done is slow the bleeding. And the Fed, of course, as you guys know, has finally had to run up the white flag as well, because the markets just cannot, nor can the economy really, but more the markets, just cannot take any more of this normalization. So we're going to be in for a long slog where we're going to see still some decent liquidity in the markets, but I think that the growth stories behind us will be lucky to have low single digit earnings growth this year. The economy will slow in the U.S., not to recession levels, but you have to consider that we're already in recession in much of the rest of the world. So I think people with this rally recently have gotten a little bit too exuberant.
All right. And just talk about where the money was going on the recent rally into the value stocks. Some of the other stocks have come back as well. Do you expect that trend to continue?
I do. I'll tell you, one of the most encouraging things, Joel, that I've heard in a very long time was a few weeks ago when Jeff Vinnick announced he was coming out of retirement. He's bringing his hedge fund out of mothballs. Here was a guy who back in the early 90s had very big shoes to fill when he took over for the legendary Peter Lynch running Fidelity's Magellan Fund. Yet he did a great job. He acquitted himself well. He left Magellan after about 5 years or so, managed money elsewhere, but he's been out of the business for a while. And what he said, kind of what I just alluded to in coming back, now he might be a bit more bullish generally on the stock market than I am, but the important point, guys, is that he thinks that this whole passive investing craze where you close your eyes and throw your money at the FANG stocks and we all live happily ever after, he thinks that's over. It's not going to be as easy going forward. And we're actually in an environment, and I think we'll go further into an environment where you're going to be rewarded for being a traditional value-oriented investor. You know, my cartoonist does a great job for me, and a while back I had him do a quick one for me. He had two panels. The first panel shows traditional investors, and it shows well-dressed, sober-looking guys. They're poring over financial statements, balance sheets, news, and things like that. That panel was labeled traditional investors. The other panel, he says, was today's investor. And you've got guys at computers with joysticks, with books, not financial statements, but the books are algorithms for dummies and things like that. So I think we're going back to the former. There's a lot of great companies that didn't participate. People are starting to look at those again. And the important thing is, guys, money managers are, whether they like it or not, because of this slow growth, muddle through, slow, dull, ache environment that we're going to go into, whether they like it or not, they're going to be forced to behave as investors would. Whoops.
At the airport?
We got to take off. We got to take off.
That's the market taking off.
That's the market taking off over ahead right now.
That's cool.
No,
that's one of the handicaps of being at a beautiful location, but next to a Northrop Grumman research facility, our little airport here.
Awesome.
That was good. No.
It wasn't.
I was worried about you there, Chris, for a few minutes there. For a few seconds there, I was like, "Is this, you gonna be okay here?" That was great.
But Chris, if I could play devil's advocate for a second here.
Sure.
Passive investing in the U.S. Equities has outperformed active managed funds over the past 20 years or so. So what is to say that trend won't continue?
Well, the reason I think it won't, Spencer, is because we have to keep in mind the underlying landscape, and that is we are at the end of a massive credit cycle. The central banks in the last 10 of those years printed money like drunken sailors. We had ZIRP, we had NERP, we had quantitative easing and all of that. And it bought a lot of extra time where the market didn't have to reckon, nor did the economies of the world have to reckon with the fact that the whole world is choking on debt. Forget about ever paying it off. It becomes a problem to even service it. So the central banks, just like the Fed recently had to do, now we're at a place where rather than printing a lot of money to keep us, to rescue us rather from a deflation and recession and market crash, now they've got to continue this to keep us from going into one, for crying out loud. So we're going to have a very much of a muddle through environment. There's not going to be the growth story or even the fantasy of the kind of a growth story that is going to allow money managers to do that any longer, to go into passive funds, because I think that we're very much going into the kind of an environment that we were coming out of when I first got in this business back in 1979. We were at the end of about a 15 or 16 year period where the market itself went sideways. It didn't do anything. And you had to bob and weave. You had to be a bit of a market timer and trader. You had to look at value, look at fundamentals. And I really think that's where we're going again. So granted, we've had a period where because of the tailwind of what the central banks were doing, a reasonably strong economy some of the time, you were able to be a passive investor. I don't think it's going to be that easy myself going forward.
Just got a quick market update. S&P's have fallen out of bed here. They do not like those numbers. The retail sales data, very, very disappointing here. We've come off. We've erased all the gains on the session. We are now flat, and we are down here. We are keeping an eye. Pre-market low is 45.5. Looks to where that's where we're headed. Yesterday's low, 42.75. Chris, a couple things here before we let you go. So if you think we're a little high here, where are you looking? Someone was asking if you were interested in the 250 level basis, the SPY. I know you're a little bit technical. You think that's something? I mean, if we were much, much lower in December, you think we could get as low as 250 and the SPY? That's about 25 handles away from here. Is that something? Is that an area where it attracts some interest?
That's probably overdoing it. I think that we're going to settle just roughly, Joel, in a range of 26 to 2800 is the best case scenario, I think, going forward. And that's even assuming we get some kind of a half-baked deal, and I use the term loosely, with China, which I've thought for a while, both sides want to save face. They want to declare victory on something. They'll kick the can down the road on all of the technology and cyber issues and all the rest of that stuff, intellectual property and whatnot. But again, you have to keep in the back of your mind that the big picture is we are at the end of a massive credit cycle, a massive credit boom. The whole world has to digest it. That environment is not going to allow for very much growth. And as I said a minute ago, we already see China slipping, Europe's going into recession. Emerging markets are still queasy. I mean, look at the dollar, for crying out loud. That's not helping things either. When it comes to expectations of growth in the rest of the world, that strong dollar is strangling a lot of people in a lot of countries still.
All right, and then give us your outlook. Do you only follow the U.S. equities, or are there other areas of the market that you're watching right now?
Oh, no, I look at emerging markets. And in fact, I think that we could have at least a nice extension of a tradable rally in emerging markets. If we get past fears of not having a trade deal with China, if, as I've warned recently, this is another shoe that could drop. If we don't see a resumption in trade issues between the U.S. and Europe, and that is very possible, and no one's paying attention to that. But if none of these bad things happen, the dollar comes off the boil a little bit because the Fed makes clear that it is going to sit on its hands for a while. It won't matter how strong the numbers get. It won't matter how well the stock market does. The Fed has removed itself from this. Then I think we're going to get some tradable rallies in emerging markets. China's already bounced a bit. I think India can bounce. Some of the South American countries where there's been some political upheavals and things are looking better. Argentina is one. Brazil might be another one can bounce. But those would be trades. I think still that we're going to have a long slog going forward. You know, a lot of people refer to copper as Dr. Copper. Well, Dr. Copper to me right now is like one of those old Foster Brooks skits for those of you guys that remember him, where he was the frontier saloon doctor. He's a quack. And unless Dr. Copper is very wrong and is a quack right now, copper's utter failure to confirm this exuberance, to confirm the rally in the stock market, is another thing that really gives me pause.
Before we, all these things that you're talking about go in, basically coming to interest rates in the Fed, and you put out an article a couple weeks ago. Chris, I didn't know that you were an astute investor and a cartoonist as well here. That is, so just on, you know, that there's the, you know, the Trump card or the ace card here. Let's talk about Jerome Powell, since he's taken over, his transformation, and, you know, the predicament that he's in.
Well, you know, one of the most understood things of my lifetime in these markets, Joel and you and Dennis and Spencer, all of you, is that Paul Volcker has got a very incomplete, for lack of a better term, view that history has accorded him. He is looked at as the bond vigilante, the hawk who, when he came on board after Carter appointed him, vanquished inflation, cured the fall in the dollar, and so forth. That is not his most important legacy. Because after about 3 years on the job, Paul Volcker did a complete 180. He enabled far greater deficits of the federal government than what he fought to get rid of when he first got on the job. He made Reaganomics possible because of the explosion in that debt. And that was the first major incident where you had a Fed chairman who made clear that if he doesn't allow the wealth effect to be fostered, if he doesn't allow stocks and bonds and real estate and other things to appreciate in value to give the economy and spenders some greater ability to drive the economy forward, then we're all toast. As the late, great newsletter editor Richard Russell, the founder of the Dow Theory Letters, put it very simply, central banks have to be in this day and age in inflate or die mode. So you had Volcker, after 3 years, flip from a hawk to a very much a dove and an enabler of an explosion in the federal debt and all that. It took Jerome Powell just under a year to do the same thing when he had to run up the white flag, because last year he seemed to forget for a while that the Fed de facto is the central banker of the world. And when they were tightening policy, it wasn't hurting the U.S. as much as it was hurting emerging markets, banks in Europe, and so forth. So Powell has flipped in less than a year's time from a hawk to a dove. He's going to stay that way longer than people realize. And again, it's to keep us from slipping into a deflationary situation like we had in 2008. And it's going to mean that they're going to print money like no tomorrow. Everybody made fun of Ben Bernanke as Helicopter Ben. This guy, when the time comes, is going to use cargo planes to shower us all with money. The good thing about it is it'll theoretically keep us in this muddle-through environment. It'll keep markets reasonably liquid, even if the broad markets don't do great. And as I said earlier, and relating this to Jeff Vinnick, it's going to be a great environment, I think, going forward if you're a fundamental value-oriented investor. There's a lot of there's a lot of good looking stuff out there.
Chris Temple has been on with us. He's editor and publisher of The National Investor. Chris, as always, thanks for the time, and we'll catch you on later in the year.
Sounds great.
All right. Joel, anything follow through in the S&P?
Triple, yeah. Triple D, did you get to cancel those bids?
Oh, yeah. we came in, so all the bids were canceled. I actually didn't get – I often get dinged on that stuff. I was like, oh, okay, I need to stop talking and start trading here. But, no, I didn't really get hit on too much there, so it was just okay. But I should have been turning around and selling stocks because, wow, we've fallen now. So we were up. We're probably about 13 handles since we started the show.
Yeah, we did. We were just hanging out there, knocking on the door of the high of the move. And then here's just a good example for, you know, like what it, you know, I'm looking at how we look at things. 62 even was yesterday's high in the spoos. We got to 63 overnight. It would have been nice if we could have held up there off the open and, you know, tested that area, because you would either have a low risk short opportunity or a chance for another break. You know, another leg higher, but now shorting's going to be a little bit trickier here after that precipitous 13-point decline. Yesterday's low, folks, is going to come into play. Let me grab my sheet. 42.75. Current low is 45 even. So that's been the highest low we've had in the entire move. That's what I'll be keeping an eye on to see if there's going to be continued weakness during the day. After that, we could drop another 16 handles into the 2620 area. All right, Spencer, did we miss some reports?
Oh, we missed
a ton of stuff.
All right, let's rip through 30 seconds of report.
All right, one of the top losers on my down filter here this morning is Fossil Group, FOSL. They reported after the bell yesterday, Q4 adjusted EPS, $1, 1 cent versus $1.11 estimate. Excuse me, sales 787 million versus 809 million, so miss on both numbers in the Q4. The Q1 sales were guidance was lower, and that's pretty much all I need to know. It's bad. It was bad across the board.
I'm not a fan of the stock. I wasn't a fan all the way when it rallied either, though, so I'm just going to stay not a fan.
And I just won't mention again, the top was this when Bubba Watson won the Masters and he was wearing that pink watch. To me, there was a double bottom at 1350. I will use that as resistance now since you're down. This stock has just been in a downtrend. Your next monthly low to contend with, 1204, folks, if you're looking for another target on the downside. 1204 was your low in March of 18.
I want to get to the CenturyLink report because this one's very, very, very interesting here.
Dividend cut.
Big dividend cut.
Oh, really?
So 15%. So the earnings 16, yeah. The earnings weren't bad, right? Q4 EPS, 37 cents versus a 32 cent estimate. Nice beat. Sales, 5.7 billion is pretty much in line with the estimate there, but they cut the dividend by a lot. They cut the dividend, quarterly dividend from 54 cents to 25 cents a share. Big dividend cut. And so that's the reason for that weakness here this morning.
It was unexpected too. So people thought the dividend was safe. Obviously not the case. And that is why you're seeing the stock get absolutely hit big time because it was down 13%. I don't know, technicals. The stock has just been in a world of hurt. Again, this is why, you know, I go with the trend as your friend. I mean, the stock has been a downtrend for almost a year. So every time it rallies, it seems to find more resistance or more bad news. Had a little rally last 4 or 5 days and boom, making new lows on the move again. So sell stocks that are in downtrends when they're ripping higher, buy stocks that are uptrends when they're dipping.
Oh, boy, we are heading towards yesterday's low here, folks. Keep an eye on now, 42.75. CTL had a big drop off that. Now, we've been lower in the session. We had a 12.25 low, so if you want to keep an eye on that, we are above it, not by much. Nice windfall for shorts here. Not sure if they're going to want to bring it in. 1316 was your low back in November of 2017. So I just keep an eye on that that pre-market low for CTL. And as you were talking, I mean, how does this, and this is a really good point here. Someone, Steve Roberts, brings up, you know, could AT&T be next? Now, I thought they had their CEO, they had someone on the TV a couple of weeks ago talking about how safe their dividend was. So I don't know, but certainly not a good sign for high-paying dividend stocks.
It's never a good sign. I mean, and this is something Kramer says right all the time. You see a dividend and it's not a REIT. I mean, the REITs are higher for their own reasons, but you see these companies with 12, 13, 15% dividends. Caution, because it probably means the dividend isn't going to be 12, 13, 14, 15% for a long period of time. So you always got to be cautious when you see those huge dividends, because a lot of times they aren't safe.
Okay. 856, Spencer. Let's keep it going.
All right, let's go to NetApp. We teased it at the top of the show. NTAP.
Destroyed.
Yeah, also reporting yesterday, $1.20 Q3 EPS versus $1.15 estimate. Sales 1.56 versus 1.6 billion. So a mixed Q3 report, but the Q4 EPS guidance was all in all in line, but they're getting a couple of downgrades here this morning. So maybe I'm missing a number there. Maybe it was a fiscal year guidance or something, but for whatever reason, it is very weak here this morning.
I don't know. The market is very weak here. We continue to fall here. So I'm kind of just focused on that. Joel, run on the tech.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm trying not to get killed.
Go. If you want to hop off, fine, because I'm going to stay on for a few minutes here and cover
some. I'm going to. So, you know, right now, we're just continuing to fall here. So I got to do some little day trading adjustments here. So, Joel, I'll keep going with you.
Hey, Dennis, keep an eye on that SPU low right there, 42.50. That matched yesterday's low. So if we're going to rebound, it's going to be off that pre-market low. This stock was rallying into the report, had initial spike down. So if you want to target where the panic selling was, that took it down to 60.40. And then you look at the 15-minute chart here, and the bulls and bears are squaring off here right around 61.75, 61.80. So I don't know. If you have to day trade this, I would look at the breakout of that consolidation, because it is staying there. It's been there for a long time. S&Ps continue to go down here, 27.42. That is below yesterday's low. Financials are getting hit. I don't like it. Spencer,
yeah.
Other reports or ratings, what do you think?
No, let's just go to the chat. There's a bunch of symbols being thrown out in both chats. Were you writing them down? Because where would you like to start?
I did. Okay. Could you also like check to see if there's news on these? Because yes. I don't. OGE, boom, boom. It's OG Energy Corp.
No news.
It's flat. If it's a no news on that?
No.
Okay. I mean, you got a double top here, and it's trying to bust through it. So last 2 days, 41.70, 41.71. Nice move for this. I believe it's an all-time high. Keep an eye. Make sure it makes a new all-time closing high today. That would be 41.67. So that closed strong. We'll see if the move can continue. If you're trying to protect profits, on the daily chart, I maybe use yesterday's low at, and this thing has been consolidation. Last 3 days' ranges are nearly matching. So break out above 41.70, buy them, break down below 41.25, sell them. EA, there's no news on that today, but it's a stock that, do you see any news on it?
No, it's not specific news. It's just, it's this continued Apex Legends story here. It's going to dominate this thing for the time being.
Okay. Interesting note on this one. Gene Munster sent out a note yesterday, and he said that, yeah, this is a good game. Yeah, they reached 25 million in like whatever, a week and a half, but that it took Fortnite, whatever, a year to reach these levels. But what his thesis is what the stock has already added, you know, it's going to add revenue to the company, right? But he thinks that the market cap is already exceeded that. So the expectation that it's already overdone. So it is good news for the company here, but he is just a little cautious on these things. I know Dennis got out of this at 105 on his swing trade. No, it was a long-term portfolio trade. I don't know. Couple red candles there after some big days. If you're leaning on a short here above 107, I know that's 5 points away, but until this thing gets above 107, it looks like it's going to try and back and fill in this market. It's not helping today. We have now, this is one of the biggest moves we've ever had while the pre-market show has been on. We've dropped 20 handles here. 27.3950 is your low. I'm looking for support, and I don't see support to 27.26. We didn't even cover Yelp, did we, Spencer?
No, we did not. Let's go to the Yelp report real quick after the bell. Yesterday there, I feel like Yelp always pops and drops on earnings, but the Yelp Q4 numbers, Q4 EPS, 37 cents. I don't believe that's comparable to the 10 cent estimate. I suppose it could be, but that would be a huge beat if it was. Sales, 243 versus $241 million. They also added to their buyback, $250 million buyback for Yelp, and it popped and dropped.
Okay. It did get a big old pop, and now it's just been a slow, slow leak here. You're still green on the session. We are green by, what, 39.16, up 69 cents. This had a big old spike here up to 42.98. Looks like you're not going to see that. What, if you're looking for more downside action on this one, you're still green on the session. If you go red, that closes 38.46. That was right near the low of the day. So for bears out there, you need to take out the closing price at 38.46. We talked about CTL. WTW, do we have any news on that?
No news this morning on Weight Watchers.
Weight Watchers coming.
Oh no,
right.
I'm sorry. They changed it. It's WW now. Whatever the name of the company is.
Really?
Yeah, they changed the name of the company. It's WW or.
But the symbol is still WTW.
Yes.
Here. Okay. It's trying. I know a lot of people have been trying to pick a bottom in this one. It stuck its head over $30, 30.15 high. Let's see if we can close over 30. 29.99 close on your daily charts if you're long this. Your next daily target on the upside will be 30.83. That was your high from the 7th here, I believe. So keep an eye. That's another target. And Weight Watchers, if you go look at the monthly chart here, what an ugly bunch of red candles here. So definitely in a decisive downtrend. And I had another stock on my mind. Oh, let's talk about this Solo, Spencer. What the heck is this stock?
Oh man, what is it? This was all over the news yesterday. I the only thing I saw that could maybe suggest a reason for the move, and this is a low floater penny stock, but some article in Bloomberg had reportedly apparently referred to this company as the Tesla of Canada or Canada's answer to Tesla. This move is completely ridiculous and not fundamental in any way, shape, or form.
Well, is that like a good thing to be the Tesla?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
They meant it as a compliment.
Okay. Well, first of all, the stock, great day yesterday for all of you that went with the momentum and followed the trend. You're being rewarded, still up $1.22. Pre-market high is 670. So this is what you want to see. You want to see it back over 670, continue to rally. Monthly high from a few weeks ago was 748. I don't know if we're going to get there. Buying this on a pullback, good luck with that on that one. I have no idea where to buy this thing on a pullback, nor would I want to. 40 million shares traded yesterday. 133,503 traded on the 12th. 40 million shares traded yesterday. So let's see if we can keep up the volume. You have to find some more buyers. We have some good buying in the pre-market. I think the most reliable thing when stocks go into these kind of modes, first of all, stay out of the way here. Maybe wait for some consolidation for the volume to come off a little bit. But this has all the recipe for a couple good days, and then we'll see what happens with it. I know absolutely nothing.
This is going to
come
down. This is going to come down. I'm seeing shares outstanding of 32 million shares. So,
oh,
40 million traded yesterday. That means every share traded hands at least once yesterday. This is your classic recipe, your recipe for a huge pop and then drop right back to where it was. So if this is your type of thing and you can make money doing this, then trading these types of high flyers,
yeah,
more power to you. But this is not this is not a sustainable trend by any means of the imagination.
Also halts on this one. One long or short, you don't want to be stuck in a trading halt in this one. So, just be aware of that, the risk reward ratio. I just wanted to mention, since we talked about Tesla here, this one, and I know Des is saying, every time it goes under 300, don't put your stop at 299. I tell you, this one, this bounce to 320 here and not breaking in and trying to fill the gap here, this one feels a little bit weak to me here, folks. So, it's managed to rebound like every time, every story, but I don't know. I just got a sneaky feeling here on this one. Self-reliance, one step at a time. That will be for
Mara. Can I just say a really, really great point, Spinner, on Solo? Wouldn't be surprised if the company does a secondary offering here with the stock.
That
great, great call on that. That would be your classic recipe there. The secondary offering at the high price, of course they do. So yeah, I would also expect to see that headline today or tomorrow in Solo. But were there any more stocks that you'd written down, Joel, on your list?
Someone just mentioned this penny stock, and I bet it stocks over $1,000. Maybe I'm worse at penny stocks here. So this one's just been kind of quiet here. I know if you buy it here at 53 cents or 54, that's the most you can lose. I don't have any comments on this one, really. Just been quiet, low volume trading stock. You need some good news on it. So, okay, Spencer, get ready for the open here. Anything you want to close out with and preview Friday's short?
Just what was the symbol on that last one, just so it's out there?
M-A-R-A.
M-A-R-A. Okay. Oh, that's Mara. That's the one that's involved with Riot Blockchain. And that one has some questionable business practices surrounding it. So be very, very careful if you're watching that.
Wait, Spencer, man, you pulled that one out of your hat. Boy, oh boy.
Well, this is one of the runs, one of the companies being run in conjunction with Barry Honig, who is under SEC investigation for Riot Blockchain. And Mara is one of the companies involved in his little umbrella of schemes there. So be very careful if you're watching Mara. But that is what...
Can you sneak in earnings for John Junu or John Ju on AstraZeneca, because that's having a nice move this morning. Can you sneak those in real quick?
AZN, sure. They reported this morning Q4 adjusted EPS $1.58. Sales revenue of 6.4 versus $6.27 billion. So a revenue beat there for the Q4, and they are trading higher.
Much higher, and you're at a great point here. You're up at $38.95. That's up $2.37, and boom, just go and look at that high. Simple technical analysis. Pair of highs, 39.14, 39.38. That would be a target for me on the upside. If you're worried about protecting profits, the low of the, I believe it was the after-hours session, pre-market session was 38.40 after that good news. I believe this is traded overseas here, so a lot of their price action already baked in here in AZN. Spencer, I will not interrupt you again. I'll let you preview Friday's show.
Yep, tomorrow's show we're joined by maybe our most relaxing guest, Anne-Marie Band. She always talks us off the ledge whenever we're scared about this market, so she'll join us tomorrow at 8:35. But if you missed any part of today's show, catch our podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play, or just watch us on YouTube. Thanks to our guest, Chris Temple. Thanks to all of you in our chat rooms. Please remember, all the information from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. Thanks, everyone, who joined us today, and we hope you join us again on Friday. Have a good one.